The last time A.J. Jacobs was on this show is when he was doing a book tour after having read Encyclopedia Britannica from A to Z and gaining all the knowledge that was therein. When he was in the studio with me that day, I said, hey, AJ, thanks for shaving. I say it as a joke because I've had a beard since I was 18 years old, and it looked like he had decided to start growing one. Little did I know that he was going to let it grow and let it grow and let it grow until he looked like Evan Almighty. Now he's back on the show to talk about the reason he was doing that and the rest of his book, The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Humble Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. Hi, AJ, how are you?
Good, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
And let's point out, you don't have the beard anymore.
Right, the beard is, I've shaved it off, but I did keep it in a plastic bag under my sink.
So. Is that just for a future reference, in case somebody wants to come back and verify that you are the guy?
That's right. Well, I wanted to, I suggested to the publisher that we give away a little souvenir tuft with every first 100 books sold. And they thought that was repulsive.
Well, I think they were right, frankly.
They're probably right.
Yeah. Approximately how many ZZ Top jokes did you get over the course of the year?
Ballpark figure 853, which I was okay with. The Unabomber jokes, those were the ones that stunk.
Yeah, I can understand that. But it was more than just the beard and the robe and all the rest. You really did try to follow the rules of the Bible, or at least many of the rules of the Bible. How many rules do you think you actually did follow over the course of the year?
Well, I read the Bible. I grew up with very little religion at all. So that, as I say in the book, I'm Jewish in the same way the Olive Garden is Italian. So that was sort of the impetus for this. I wanted to know what I was missing by not having any religion. And I have a young son. I want to know what to teach him.
Okay.
So I decided to read. I read the Bible from cover to cover, and I wrote down every single rule I could find. And the list was 100 rules.
How many?
Over 700.
So did you have a big blackboard in the house, or did you have them printed out from your printer? Or where were the 700 rules posted so you knew what to follow?
They were in my computer, and I printed them out. There was over 72 pages. And they ranged from the ones that we all know, the famous ones, like the Ten Commandments and love thy neighbor and be fruitful and multiply, wanted to do those. But then there are these dozens or hundreds of other ones that are not quite as famous. The beard, for instance, or you're not allowed to wear clothes made of mixed fibers.
That's not actually what it says, is it?
It says... You cannot wear clothes made of, you mean wool and linen?
It says a garment of cloth made of two kinds of stuff.
Well, it depends on your translation. There are some that say five.
I'm going with your translation from Leviticus 19:19. Well, I didn't know the Bible included the word stuff.
Yeah, the Bible, you know what I love is the Bible includes the word awesome a lot.
But only in sense of the word awe, right?
That's true. Yeah. It's not like a surfer dude. Jeff Spicoli did not write the...
Were there a lot of surfer dudes in the Bible?
Not a tremendous amount.
Not a lot. So anyway, back to the clothing. So you couldn't wear mixed fibers, which means no polyester?
I threw away all of my poly cotton. Anything with mixed fibers I got rid of. And then there were laws, I wanted to follow everything without picking and choosing. That was my goal. No cherry picking. So I also wanted to stone adulterers. So that was part of my year.
That was actually the reason you started the project, wasn't it? I mean, all the rest of it, the beard, the outfit, and everything else aside, you just wanted to have a reason to stone an adulterer. You lived through the Clinton years like the rest of us, and you were sick of it.
Maybe unconsciously, you're right.
So how did you justify that, and how did it work out?
Well, I did actually. I was able to stone one adulterer. It happened later in the year, and I was in my full biblical clothing, the robe and the sandals, and a man came up to me and asked me why I was dressed like that, and I explained to him my project, and he said, "Well, I'm an adulterer. Are you going to stone me?" And I said, "Well, that would be great." I took out a handful of pebbles because I had been carrying around these pebbles for months, hoping for this to happen. And because it doesn't say the size of the stones in the Bible, so this was my loophole.
Uh-huh.
And he grabbed the stones out of my hand and threw them at my face. So sort of as an eye for an eye,
ah.
retaliated and threw him back at him.
And then he wrestled you to the ground and mugged you.
Now that was kind of the end of our confrontation.
After you threw the pebbles at him, he was gone?
Yeah, he brushed by me. Well, I did leave out one detail, that he was an elderly man.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think he wanted to throw down, and I certainly didn't either.
Awesome!
So the elderly man admits that he's an adulterer. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. He was in his 70s, but, with medication nowadays, you can...
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
Now, are you married?
I am, and I am still married, even after this.
That's a very important point. How'd the wife take this whole thing?
Well, she's a saint for putting up with me, I got to say. I mean, there was a lot of things in the year that totally enhanced our lives. That was what was amazing about the year, is that there were some things that really made me, progress and evolve, and I became much more thankful, which my wife liked. I became much more, I observed the Sabbath, which my wife likes, because we spend time together on Saturday and Sunday. But then there were the things that drove her crazy, like there are these rules in the Old Testament about not touching women during certain times of the month. And even more than that, if you take it literally, you can't sit on a seat where a woman from her impure time of the month has sat.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife thought this was incredibly sexist and sat in every chair in our apartment.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was forced to stand for much of the year.
Why couldn't you sit on the floor, AJ?
Well, I did end up sitting on the floor quite a bit.
But I'm curious as to how you interpreted the, husbands love your wives like Christ loved the church. How did you work that one out?
Well, I did... I'm head of the household?
Yeah, how did that whole submission? She's not doing it, so she didn't have to deal with the whole submission thing.
Right. That one did not translate too well into pragmatic terms.
Which means what, AJ?
That I failed. I would try to put my foot down, and these things were ignored.
Speaking of these sort of things, would you please tell the story about the rules in the Bible about negative speech? And how that worked in your house?
Well, sure. This was actually one of the more profound and wonderful things about my year, but also incredibly challenging, was that you were not allowed to gossip. You can't say negative things about other people, which is crazy because incredibly hard. I live in New York City, and I work in the media, so that's pretty much all we do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an amazing feeling to try to sort of have this ethical makeover where I wouldn't say negative things. And I will tell you, this was fascinating for me to learn. There is a hotline. There are suicide hotlines. There's a gossip hotline that is run by Orthodox Jewish rabbis, and you can call them when you have the urge to gossip, and they will talk you down from the ledge.
Really?
So I did this a few times. I called them, and they talked me down.
But there was one incident about the negative speech where your wife was complaining to you about one of her clients.
That's true. Yeah, well, here is an example of why you have to pick and choose. You can't, because some of the rules do contradict each other. So there's a rule that you have to love and respect your wife, and then there's the rule that you can't say negative things. She was complaining about a client. I said, sorry, I don't know the client. I can't say anything bad about them. And she got hugely annoyed. I realized that I probably chose the wrong rule.
Yeah, because she wants you to side with her against whoever she's angry with at that moment, and the I'm not going to say anything negative about anyone rule has to go out the window if we're going to remain married.
That's right. So you have to wrestle with it. You can't just say, Bible says X. Therefore, I'll do X.
Talking with A.J. Jacobs, the author of The Know-It-All, about his new book, The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Humble Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. I will tell you, I really enjoyed reading this, A.J., but it did seem to me like you were doing some parts of this as almost a stunt, while also at other times looking for loopholes and making up your own cafeteria religion. Do you think that's a valid criticism?
Well, I'll tell you about the cafeteria religion. First of all, let me just say, you know, there certainly was a stunt element to it because I am a writer and I knew I was going to write a book.
Yeah.
But it is the most fascinating topic to me, and the way I like to approach a topic is to dive right in and try to live it. That's why I read the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yep.
That's why I write for Esquire magazine, and I wrote an article called My Outsourced Life, where I hired a team of people in Bangalore, India, to live my life for me. So they answered my email, they answered my phone, they argued with my wife for me. It was one of the best months of my life. So I love doing these sort of immersion experiments, lifestyle experiments. And this one was by far the most profound and the most life-altering of all of those experiments. And it was just an amazing year. So... And it changed my life in 100 ways, in major ways. So it was certainly more than just a flippant little gimmick. It was a huge and fascinating undertaking. And as for cafeteria religion, that was one of the big conclusions from my year, is that I tried to follow everything in the Bible, and you can't. There has to be some picking and choosing when you're following the Bible. And I think everyone does it, whether they admit it or not. But here's my thing. They call it cafeteria religion as a negative, but I say there's nothing wrong with cafeterias. I've had some great meals at cafeterias. It's all about picking the right parts of the Bible, parts about compassion and tolerance, not about hatred or violence and intolerance.
Did you tithe?
I did tithe, absolutely, 10% to the poor and widows. I actually at one point considered putting on a sticker on the front of the book that said 10% of the profits go to poor and widows, but I thought that might be a tad tacky.
Yeah, and plus the publisher might not go along. The book is called A.J. Jacobs, The Year of Living Biblically. I'll tell you one good thing, you know, this isn't exactly a tithe, but one thing related to that that can happen with this book is we'll put up a link to it on KMOX.com where our listeners can buy it, and if they use that link through our Amazon store on our website, a portion of the proceeds will go to help out our friends at St. Louis Children's Hospital.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, we do this with all the books, with all the authors that we have on the show, and so we're happy to add you to that list as well. And I don't want anybody who's listening to us today who may be a religious person to be offended by what we're doing here, because we're just talking about AJ's own experience. But I'm sure that in the course of the year that you did this, AJ, you did run into some people who were very religious. I know you went and spent time with the Amish and with the Hasidic Jews and some Jehovah's Witnesses, and even went to Lynchburg, Virginia, to Jerry Falwell's church. Did you run into any problems with any of those people over your experiment?
You know, I thought I would have, and I didn't, and I'm not quite sure why. I think it was because I went in with a very open mind to learn about religion, not to mock it or judge it. And I think they sensed that I was deeply curious and had an open mind, and they responded. And I've got to say, so far at least, the response from the religious community and the secular community has been very warm, and this might qualify as unbiblical boasting, so you'll have to excuse me, but I'm very proud because this month, November, I'm on the cover of an evangelical Christian magazine, but I'm also featured in Playboy and Penthouse.
Well, that would be the two extremes right there, wouldn't it?
That's right.
Did you consult any religious people before embarking on this so that, A, you would know what to expect, and, B, you'd know to be careful about the toes you might step on?
Oh, absolutely. I had a board of spiritual advisors, so I had rabbis, priests, and ministers on call. And I also embedded myself in these communities to learn about how they interpreted the Bible. So I went to evangelical Christians and the Hasidic Jews and the Amish, and I think I might be the first person to out-Bible talk a Jehovah's Witness.
What do you mean?
Wow, you win something there.
Thank you. Well, he came over to my house. I invited him over, and after 3.5 hours, he just looked at his watch and was like, I got to go.
Now, did he just happen to come to your house, or did you call and say, I'd like to have someone come and talk to me?
No, I live in New York, where you actually don't get a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses ringing your doorbell. So I actually had to call the headquarters and get someone to come out, and they were baffled. I don't think they'd encountered this before. So
I'm sure it not.
Like 5 or 6 calls, but I finally got one.
I am sure that this book is going to be a bestseller, but if you are retaining some of your biblical knowledge, I guess you can't look at the bestseller list, because would that qualify as coveting?
That would probably qualify as coveting, yes. And checking my Amazon sales ranking also, no.
But you're doing it anyway.
Yeah, probably. No, I actually haven't looked at my Amazon, but I do know I'm on the New York Times bestseller.
But was that a problem?
Oh, a huge problem. I mean, coveting, I loved trying to battle coveting, and I think I made some progress, maybe cut down by 30 or 40%, but trying to cut it all out. It's like trying to cut out breathing. It's so hard.
In what way?
Well, it's just, you know.
What did you find yourself?
Natural.
What did you find yourself coveting and then catching yourself doing it?
Well, everything. You know, you could covet, it's partly material goods, like covet the iPhone and covet, a flat screen TV. And you just have to remind yourself to be thankful that you have a TV at all, that you have, you know, and also you have a remote, and it's not so bad. So that's the way to battle it. But then there was also the lust, battling lust, which was a huge, especially since I work at Esquire magazine, not exactly a biblical magazine.
Yeah.
And my boss has decided it'd be funny to tempt the Bible guy. So they actually sent me to interview this beautiful actress named Rosario Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
So this is horrible. I couldn't look at her. And she's a lovely woman, but she has the dirtiest mouth in Hollywood.
Wow. So
I could barely listen to her. I had to say a lot of prayers that night.
What do you mean you couldn't look at her? You were doing an interview face-to-face with Rosario Dawson, but your face wasn't looking at her face?
Well, you know, I glanced at her. I tried to keep my eyes averted because just the very, very gaze was, very tempting. And I'll tell you what was even worse is that as a journalist, I felt I had to watch her movies. But those movies were filled with some serious coveting and harlotry. So I joined a service which will cut out, it'll pre-censor the movies and cut out the naughty bits.
Yeah, how'd that work?
Well, I rented Alexander, which apparently she co-stars in. But the version I saw, she
was 5 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's about 5 minutes long. I don't know what she was doing because she didn't appear in my version. But
you know, one would imagine with the whole covet thing that you might not be able to have the kind of job you have, truly.
It was, certainly a clash. There was certainly some conflict there.
I want to go back to the iPhone for just a second here, because I'm a person who, when I first heard about the iPhone, I said, ooh, I want one of those, and now I do actually have one of those.
Nice.
Was my simply saying, ooh, I want one of those, is that coveting, or would it be, I want his iPhone would be coveting?
Well, it depends on which spiritual advisor you talk to. Some say even the act of being overly desirous. If you spend too much time thinking about it, it takes you away from thinking about more important things. So
if I go to lunch and I see that the guy next to me has ordered a delicious-looking corned beef sandwich, and I go, ooh, I want one of those, that's not coveting. That's ordering lunch, right?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
Don't spend too much time on fantasizing about it, and you'll be okay.
The book is called The Year of Living Biblically. On the front, there is a rendering of him in a robe with sandals holding up the Ten Commandments, and looks like a cup of Starbucks coffee. And on the back, actual photographs of you walking along with the robe and the staff. And are those tevas you're wearing?
I'm afraid so. They are sandals, but they are tevas, yeah.
And are those real sheep?
That is real sheep. They.
How'd you get sheep into Times Square?
Well, you can rent them. I didn't actually have sheep in my apartment, although I did spend a week in Israel, and I spent a day as sort of a shepherder. This shepherd let me be the guest shepherd for a day, and it was a fantastic experience.
Did you actually have to shear any sheep, or was it just getting them to go from one part of the pasture to another?
Yeah, more just guiding them and leading them, so no shearing.
Now, you mentioned going to Israel, and you traveled around a lot of places, and I'm curious how the TSA greeted you in your full garb.
I got to say, there were some, I did spend some time at airport security. they had some questions. And
luckily, what were their questions and what were your answers?
Well, it was actually the trip to Israel I spent the longest amount of time because I had the beard, but I didn't have the black hat that most Orthodox Jews have. So that was confusing. So it took a while of convincing them that I was a writer, and this was part of a grand experiment.
Did you start using the word thou a lot?
You know, the Bible talk definitely seeps in, I got to say, the friends, they love to talk to me in the Bible language. So they would say, you know, wouldst thou like to go out for pizza? You know, and so I got that all the time.
And I'm glad you said pizza, Paul, because fasting is a big part of the Bible. Did you fast?
I did do fasting, and it changed my diet radically because there are a lot of food taboos in the Old Testament, like no pork and no shellfish. But interestingly, it does allow you to eat crickets and locusts. So I thought to get into the biblical mindset, I would try that. So
how'd that work out?
What's that?
How'd that work out?
Well, they were crunchy. I wouldn't say they were delicious, but they weren't terrible.
And speaking of Bible talk, I know you and your wife did a lot of begatting. And I'm not saying that as anything dirty. I know that you were trying to become parents. And how'd that work out?
Well, the Bible does say be fruitful and multiply. It's the very first commandment. So I decided to follow that one, and we actually were successful. We had twins at the end of the year.
So you multiplied by two.
We multiplied by two. That's right.
I did not
name them. All my friends wanted us to name them Cain and Abel or Jacob and Esau, but we couldn't go that far.
So was she, when you said we need to be fruitful and multiply, because you've already commented that she didn't go along with some things.
Right.
This was probably the easiest one because she wanted to become a mommy.
Absolutely.
She wanted it. Yeah, she definitely it fit into our agenda anyway. So.
Now, I got to say, while we're talking about you and your wife, and I'm going to let you go right after this, I promise. The Bible, I know, is very male-oriented. And frankly, I don't think I would be rude to say that there are some parts of it that are downright misogynistic. Because that was the thinking of 5,000 years ago.
It was a man's world back then, absolutely.
How'd that go over at home?
Not great. that was a challenge. I mean, my wife is a wonderfully strong woman, so she wasn't about to let me take command of the household. And there were things like that definitely challenged our relationship, like the Bible tells you to build a hut once a year to remember our forefathers. And I couldn't get permission to build a hut on the streets of New York, so I ended up building one in our living room of our apartment.
Which she then refused to sleep in with you.
That's true. She's like, I'm sleeping on my bed. You can sleep on the floor of your hut.
You have her read Proverbs 31, and she'll see herself in that.
Yeah.
Okay. She will.
And then she'll show you a calendar and say, do you see the year? I'm going into the bed. If you need me, that's where I'll be. That's where the begatting will take place. AJ, congratulations on another successful experiment and a very, very, very well-done book. It's called The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Humble Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. Again, use the link on KMOX.com, and we'll give a portion of the proceeds to St. Louis Children's Hospital. AJ, thanks for your time today.
Oh, thanks, Paul. I had a great time.
AJ Jacobs here on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.